Well, good morning, everyone. Thanks for showing up this morning for the first talk of this session. What I'm going to talk about is a kind of a four-year summary of a medium-term experiment we've had in Minnesota, where we've been looking at interactions between phosphorus, potassium, and sulfur in a corn-soybean rotation. I'm going to go through a little bit of our justification behind this. And what I'm going to say on this is, with this particular study, the main focus of the study when I set this up was to look more at sulfur, to get a general idea on how sulfur was cycling within rotations based on some of the questions we were getting from some growers. I really wanted to have a better handle on what was happening, where inputs were going, and when we start looking at fine-tuning our recommendations for corn specifically on sulfur, possibly what was happening within the next year when we had some of the fields that were going back and rotated to soybeans. So just a little background on what's been going on. Since I started in Minnesota in 2007, we've seen somewhere between a 3 to 4-fold increase in the amount of sulfur being sold and used on many of our fields. Much of that's going to corn. When we start looking at the increases, some to alfalfa. We do have a little bit of canola in the northwest of that. I don't think it's changed too much in terms of what we've seen application in this particular time period. But we've been getting more questions on soybean within the rotation. Many of the growers, too, when we look at what they're actually applying, they're applying a much higher rate than what we've been recommending for corn, which on an annual basis for most of our medium to fine textured soils is somewhere between 10 to 20 kg per hectare is what we're typically recommending for an annual application. But many times we're seeing about double that applied, because that's consistent with our older recommendations, which were geared mainly towards coarse textured soils with low organic matter. But when we look at the research, when I started, we had some studies starting back in 2008 and 2009. We were seeing some very large yield increases to sulfur. And I stretch back, looking back to where my predecessor was working there in Minnesota, George Rehm had some data back in the 90s where they were actually starting to see some instances of responses occurring on eroded areas and medium textured soils. But again, we're seeing increased questions related to sulfur on soybean. We had a study back in 2008 and 2009, some strip trials where we looked at sulfur response. So that's published in Agronomy Journal, where we saw one location on a soil with a very low organic matter level, less than 20 grams per kilogram in the surface 15 centimeters, where we did see a response. That particular site, though, looking at a field area that had a lot of sulfur applied within or manure applied within the last 10 to 15 years. So it set up pretty well for when we look at the year in 2009 for sulfur responses, for a response to occur within that soybean location. And for this particular study, there was a study out of Lamberton, Minnesota, where they were looking at a high-yield system type study where they had multiple changes in inputs where they were looking at a high-input system versus a low-input system. One of the treatments they did have in that particular study was treatments with and without sulfur, and they were seeing, at least in 2009, about a 600 kilogram per hectare yield increase from the soybean crop from the sulfur treatment. So after a couple of years of getting beat over the head a little bit with some of that data from that aspect, I wanted to look at more closely whether or not there are any components within that on the fertility side that we're maybe seeing some interactions for that soybean crop that we're seeing some benefits and where we can potentially look at some recommendations to our growers to try to increase some of the soybean yields that have been fairly stagnant over the last few years. So wanted to start digging into that, and that's where I started looking at the components of that particular study, and the thing that really stuck out in that study was the soil test potassium levels in their treatments. That phosphorus was generally high enough where we shouldn't have seen a large yield response, but their potassium treatments were drastically different between their high and low input system, that I wanted to look at that potassium sulfur component in particular. So as far as the questions I was trying to address, the first one was probably the biggest. Is there a synergistic relationship effect of P and K on sulfur response in corn and soybean? And then looking at from a cycling aspect, and I'm not going to talk too much about the cycling component. I've got one slide where I'm going to talk a little bit about it. But we were looking at what were the mechanisms, what was happening within those rotations. Specifically, were we seeing any cycling of sulfur in the crop residue, or was if we were seeing a response to the soybean year, if we've applied everything before the corn, was that increase due to a direct carryover of sulfate sulfur, which we get a lot of concerns from our growers because of the mobility of the sulfate. They're really concerned that annual applications are what they need to have because of that anion has a tendency to leach out of the system. So this is a picture of one of the studies we had going. Split plot design, main plots, where we're looking at a factorial arrangement of 0 or 28 kilograms of sulfur per acre, or 0 or 59 kilograms of P per hectare. What these were intended to simulate was over what we'd recommend for, or higher than what we'd typically recommend for these particular systems. Then within the subplots, we were looking at 0, 93, 186, and 279 kilograms of K per hectare. And the 186 rate was about what we'd recommend for a low-testing soil in a corn-soybean rotation. So trying to bracket a higher and a lower rate with that, with the potassium. We were using triple superphosphate, potassium chloride, and ammonium sulfate was our were our fertilizer sources. Subplot size, 4.6 meters wide by 10.7 meters long, and our nitrogen was the component we kept at a non-limiting rate. We also looked at zinc, but in most of these studies, we were over about a 1.5 milligrams per kilogram level, which is well above our what our critical level is for zinc within the state. So I just tried to break down these locations. I'm going to talk about them individually. We had four locations that we started. Two of them were started in 2011 and two in 2012. I color-coded the data here with the initial soil test data to kind of give you a general handle on where we thought the responsiveness to the particular nutrients are going to be. So the red areas are we'd expect a high probability of response. The blue would be a low probability, and the green would be kind of a moderate probability or somewhere around our medium classification for these particular soil tests. So we are targeting sites that we would potentially see more than one nutrient have a high probability of response. The only site that we really didn't see was this Rochester site where we had a very low probability of both P and K and then soil organic matter. What we're teaming as a high probability is around the 20 grams per kilogram range. A low would be somewhere above about 40 grams per kilogram. So we had a pretty wide spread in terms of what we'd expect in terms of expected crop responses. The only one that we did saw some inconsistency was the location at Becker, which is our only irrigated site, where we saw a pretty significant drop with the Bray soil test going from 20 down to 9 in our controls within that third year, that second rotational cycle of that. So what I'm going to summarize here mainly is what we had for grain yield response. I'm not going to talk about the individual responses within the location. I just wanted to summarize where we're seeing the significant effects and breaking it down by the main treatment. So the first slide I'm going to show is what we saw for effects of phosphorus and potassium at each of the locations, and then the next slide I'll show will be what we had for sulfur. And overall, what we're looking at, phosphorus, three of the locations we saw a response. The only one that was somewhat surprising was that C1, which is our corn, in that first rotational cycle at the Red Wing location, that particular site for some reason seems to have a little bit higher response to phosphorus. And I haven't figured out why, because we look at phosphorus with depth and it actually slightly increases with depth, where we're looking at maybe around 30 milligrams per kilogram levels in the upper 15 centimeters, and we even get down to that 30 to 60, we start to see a little bit higher level with that one. So that one surprised me a little bit. The rest of these locations, though, if we start looking at a low to moderate level, especially Becker and Lamberton, it really doesn't surprise me that we're seeing some increase. And for the most part, we're seeing anywhere on the magnitude around 500 to 800 kilograms per hectare increase in corn grain yield at these particular locations. As far as potassium, again, not much of a surprise. The Red Wing location was our lowest. The only one that hit me at this particular location is we had a pretty significant yield decrease at the Becker location, and I haven't been able to nail why that occurred at this particular point in time, but that way it was clear and it was linear in terms of the rates we had. So for some reason in 2012 when we had that particular study there, and I've actually started to see a little bit more this last year when we had corn at this particular location, it wasn't significant, but the yields were trending somewhat the same way in terms of lowered yields at this particular location. So there's been some interesting things on that end that have been occurring in terms of what we would expect, but for the most part in our medium soils, and we're really seeing, looking at those potassium levels, they're around somewhere around that critical level where everything was pretty clear, much clearly responding on a given year-to-year basis. And sulfur, pretty much like what we saw before, when we're looking at the sites with lower organic matter in the top 15 centimeters is really where we're seeing the highest potential for response. The location we had at Red Wing where we had one of the lowest concentrations is where we saw consistent responses. Interesting enough, this last year, in 2014, both of the locations we had, in these Red Wing and Rochester locations are in our southeastern part of the state where we tend to have a little bit more rolling topography with more eroded areas on these given fields, a pretty consistent response across those two locations with the sulfur treatments. And it surprised me a little bit, but we've had excessive rainfalls for the last 2 years in many of these locations, which we're going to get leaching. We may explain some of what we're seeing in terms of the increased sulfur responses in the soybean years within these particular studies, but very large yield increases and more than adequately would pay for that that application we put on with that the 28 kg per hectare rate we were using for the sulfur in those two-year rotations. And then one location at Lamberton, that was the only location where we actually broke the corn-soybean cycle. The first year of the study, we were actually following corn on that. And we've actually seen with many of our studies a little bit higher incidence of response because of the corn-on-corn rotations across Minnesota. So that one didn't surprise me that first year, but we haven't really seen anything beyond that in terms of looking at seeing any yielding responses from sulfur within that particular location. The only one that was a little surprising was Becker, and that one I think what we're seeing in some of our irrigated sites is a high amount of sulfate coming through the irrigation water. And I've had studies out for the past 3 to 4 years where we're seeing anywhere from about 10 to 20 kilograms of sulfur as sulfate being applied per hectare with the irrigation water. So I'm starting to think right now in some of the locations we have with the irrigated that early on we're going to likely see more of a deficiency than later on, especially if we get into years where we have to heavily irrigate because of dry weather conditions. So with the interactions, I didn't summarize and go out individually on these. I just kind of gave an overview of what we're seeing because when I start looking at this data with the actual interactions, really the main treatment effects are really what are sticking out more than anything because the interactions have really been inconsistent. And I didn't necessarily expect to see many interactions with the particular nutrients we were looking at. We had a companion set of studies where we were looking at nitrogen by sulfur when we were running a lot of these studies where I expect to see more of an interaction on that particular study than I would with these phosphorus, potassium, and sulfur. But we did see a few phosphorus by sulfur, the Rochester location. For some reason, we weren't getting as high of a yield response or any yield response from the treatments that had phosphorus and sulfur. The treatment for that particular location, the first rotational year, it seemed like the yields were a little bit higher in the sulfur-only treatments, but that was about all we could pick up. So overall, when I look at that interaction, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with plot variability and some of the things we're dealing with when we're starting to get these trials set up. And then one of the locations we're seeing a response to sulfur just based on the levels of P, but it again, really wasn't anything consistent. Then also P by K, again, when I look at it, not consistent. One study or a couple of sites with a crossover interaction, a few other things going on. So again, really nothing there. And then the S by K, not a whole lot in terms of the interaction. That's really what I wanted to look at within this particular study. So in terms of cycling, I don't have anything on the residue. We really didn't see anything with the residue that would make me think that we're actually cycling any sulfur in the corn residue to the sulfur year, to the soybean year. I just picked one of the locations just to show you what we had for the monocalcium phosphate extractable sulfur by depth. And I think looking at a lot of the data we're seeing is something like this, where even 2 years post application, we're seeing elevated sulfur levels somewhere within that profile. So I think if we're seeing yield responses within this, I think a lot of the data what we're pointing to is actually a direct carryover of sulfate sulfur, even in some of these medium textured soils. So if I look at it in terms of a potential, in terms of what I'm recommending overall, we're still going to recommend for most of our growers to target the corn year because that's where we're going to see some higher chances of seeing a yield response. Then overall, for what we're looking at in terms of carryover, I think that the soils is probably the more plausible place we're seeing a carryover. So I mean, in conclusion, when we're looking at it, when deficient additions, they seem to be an additive effect. When we look at PKRS, we don't really see much of an interaction. The potential seems low, but it's something we'll continue to work on because these plots will be going for another 2 to 3 years. Then when we look at soybean, that again, we're seeing a more of a response to the nutrients carried over. We're really not seeing any of that residue becoming our main effect in terms of what's happening. So I'd like to open it up for questions, but I think we're probably out of time. So I'll be around actually here to the break. So if you have any questions, feel free, or I'll be around here a little bit after the talk. So thank you. Yeah, and that's when they said I looked at it, and we didn't expect it at first, but then when I started looking at it, those numbers are pretty high, what we're seeing. And this last year, we actually had some irrigated sites that responded, but we didn't have irrigation really started till later in the season because we had so much rainfall. So I think that increased the potential. But I would assume, just looking at it, that's kind of the same thing I've been thinking for what we've been seeing, that the non-irrigated states should respond a little bit more because of that sulfate contribution.